Welcome to Blue Shift, brought to you from NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. I'm Maggie Massetti. Both Sarah and I have been involved with science education and public outreach, working on a lot of projects beyond NASA Blue Shift. The job of taking science and trying to explain it to the public so that it's not only understandable, but correct, is often a challenge. But we both feel it's so important that the public, as well as the next generation of kids, care about what NASA is doing, and more than that, we want people to have an interest or a curiosity in how the universe works. The questions are, how do you make people care? What's the best way to convey how awesome science can be? And how do you combat the misinformation and superstition that are already out there? Since this is a subject we spend a lot of time discussing amongst ourselves, we thought we'd consult some other well-known names in the field of myth-busting. The first of these is the so-called bad astronomer, Dr. Phil Plait. Phil used to work here at NASA Goddard, but is now a full-time writer and advocate for both good science and the busting of misconceptions. This podcast is the first part of our interview with him in which we learn what makes him the bad astronomer, why he blogs about misconceptions, and how to keep skepticism alive.
So Phil, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, I've done a lot of different things, so it's hard to know exactly where to start, but I guess I can say I'm trained as an astronomer. I got an undergraduate degree in astronomy, then went on to get my PhD at the University of Virginia. I used Hubble when it didn't work very well, and then continued to use it after it started to work well. Worked at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center for several years on the Space Telescope Imaging Spectrograph, which was put up on board Hubble in the late 90s, fried out, and then got fixed a couple of years ago on the last servicing mission. So it was nice to see that thing getting working again. I've also done... Oh my gosh, educational stuff for NASA. I was at Sonoma State University for several years with NASA grants, developing educational activities, doing sort of formal and informal, you know, sort of in-classroom and outside-of-classroom educational stuff. And then sometime around when I was in grad school, I started writing, and I created a web page which was brand new on the web. You had to use Mosaic to look at it. You know, this was like 1993, so I... Yeah, I know. I believe we were using stone knives and bearskins, if I can quote Spock. And I started writing about astronomy and science, and that's just basically taken over my life over the past few years. Now that's what I do. I'm out there trying to talk to people about astronomy and how cool it is.
What makes you the bad astronomer?
That name... my mother still gives me grief about that. The original website was called Bad Astronomy because I took on misconceptions, myths and misconceptions about astronomy. And this was stuff like, in the beginning, it was like why you can stand eggs on end any day of the year and not just on the vernal equinox, which is a legend which back then was pretty big and is now sort of dying off. I don't hear that much about it anymore. But then just other things like people who think the sky is blue because it's reflecting ocean water, or why the moon looks big on the horizon and people say it's atmospheric refraction, and in fact it's not. It has nothing to do with that. It's just a straight illusion. And it just got bigger and bigger over the years. I started tackling pseudoscience like astrology and UFOs. Mm-hmm. And calling it bad astronomy made sense, and then somebody started calling me the bad astronomer. I guess it just got picked up here and there, and I thought, that's funny. I like that. I don't have any problems with that. And it turned out to be really good branding.
Absolutely.
So now it's just everywhere, you know, on Twitter and all of that, it's bad astronomer, and it's easy to remember, and I like it. So there you go.
What makes you blog about hoaxes and bad science and misconceptions?
Well, the reason anybody would, they tick me off, right? Part of it is that old cartoon from, I think it was from XKCD, that says, I can't go to bed, there's something wrong on the internet. And, you know, it's like, oh, I've got to fix this. You know, somebody's saying this and this is wrong. I've actually moved away from that because, honestly, you know, you're standing there with a thimble trying to stop a tsunami, so it's not going to work. And I try to pick and choose my battles a lot better. But honestly, that's still part of the motivation. You know, people are saying things that are wrong. Most of the time, it's not a big deal. It's not going to destroy the Earth if people have some misconception about astronomy. On the other hand, you can use them to point out funny things. You know, if there's a mistake in the movie Iron Man, which is, you know, a huge blockbuster movie, and I can say, oh, you know, they kind of forgot to take account of momentum here. And when he lands in the desert in that suit, they would open it up and they would find him, you know, basically a cup full of goo at one end of the suit. So, you know, it's fun to talk about that kind of stuff. And it helps. I hate to use the word educate because that sounds so formal and people don't want to be educated. But I think people, they do, they just don't want it to be called that. So it's fun to be able to say, you know, hey, look, this is interesting that you would say that, but here's what's really going on. And it's just awesome to be able to see that light go on when you're talking to somebody and they go, oh, it's terrific.
To us, that's the why. That's asking why and being sort of naturally curious. And so I want to know, were you the kid who always asked why?
I guess. It's hard to remember that far back when, you know, when the moon was half as close as it is now and the Earth was spinning faster and dinosaurs were. But I think so. I seem to remember always poking my teachers, mm-hmm. and they would pull me aside after class. And the good ones would say, I'm glad you would do that. Here's what you need to look up in a book someplace. And the other ones would say, you know, shut up, kid, and go stand in the corner, which I got that too. But that natural curiosity is something that when you look at really good teachers, really good scientists, and even a lot of other people at the top of their game, I'm actually fascinated by the mechanics of comedy now, and how comedians stand up on stage and make funny. And it turns out there's a pretty good overlap with people who stand up and give talks about science. And, you know, they haven't lost their curiosity either. If you can't look around the corner, if you can't try to find that left-hand turn, you're not going to be able to make a joke. You're not going to have a punchline. And so I think there's a lot of people out there who still have that curiosity in them. And for me, it's the worst thing to see it crushed out of a kid, because that natural curiosity is how we know everything there is to know about what we know.
Well, and that's our big concern, is the people who have lost that why and that natural curiosity. And so what advice do you have for keeping it alive, for cultivating critical thinking and good skepticism?
I don't know. There's a lot. There are a lot of different directions you can go, a lot of different fingers you can point, and I don't necessarily want to do that. Mm-hmm. But parents need to cultivate that curiosity in their kids. It doesn't even have to be proactive, as long as it's not negative. As long as you don't say, kid, go away, or whatever. Encouraging somebody to be curious, encouraging a kid to investigate the world around them, is just a matter of not shutting them down. Mm-hmm. And saying, oh, you know, that's interesting. Why does that spider look like that? Let's look it up. You know, why is that cloud shaped that way? Let's look it up. And you can find out things that way, and also encourage them to go beyond that. You don't want to make them think that science is just something you can look up. It's a matter of exploration, right, and all of that. Teachers need to do this as well. Certainly pop culture, television, and all of that need to encourage curiosity. Right now, this has been true for decades. It's the opposite. You know, the skeptic is the one who always gets slapped down at the end of the show. And it's actually kind of nice to see science having turned around the past couple of years. TV shows are hiring science advisors, mm-hmm. and they're encouraging accurate science up until, you know, it hurts the story. But they're making an effort, which I think is fantastic. And the scientists are becoming the heroes. When you look at these TV shows, a lot of them, the scientists are the good guys. It's terrific.
Tune in next time for more of our interview with Phil Plait, in which we discuss science and pop culture, particularly his relationship with the Mythbusters and Big Bang Theory TV shows. For more information on this interview, check out our blog at universe.nasa.gov/blueshift. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook as NASA Blueshift, all one word. Let us know what you'd like to hear more of either there or through our website feedback form. I'm Maggie Massetti, bringing the universe closer to you with Blueshift.